Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on The Brian Lehrer Show, nature bats last. We humans may think we control everything on Earth, but often the planet gets last licks, to borrow from the baseball world, from avian flu to the pollen tsunami. As part of the special today, we're inviting all of you to submit the best nature photo now sitting on your phone to an online gallery we're creating. If nature has stopped you in your tracks recently and you stopped to shoot the moment, shoot it over to us using the hashtag BLS for Brian Lehrer Show, BLS Nature on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook. And you see the images already submitted. You can see the images already submitted by searching that hashtag BLS Nature. Or we also have the photos aggregated together on our webpage, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, take a look, and add your snaps to the collection as we go along. When has nature stopped you in your tracks recently? Share the best nature shot now sitting on your phone. Use the hashtag BLSNature on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. There's an amazing crowdsourcing project involving public radio, citizen scientists, and other partners that we thought we would invite you in on, too, to begin the program today, developed by one of the guests we're about to meet, called the I See Change Almanac. It's photos, videos, text, or anything else posted by you, posted by anybody, that documents climate change in our backyards, the I See Change Almanac, it is called. We will invite you in on the phones and social media with your own observations in just a minute. With me right now are Julia Kumari Drapkin, executive producer and creator of I See Change and thealmanac.org, and Lily Bruy, senior journalism researcher for the I See Change project. Thanks for coming on WNYC, Julia and Lily. Hello from New York.
Hi there. It's actually just Lily on the line today,
oh,
and I'm in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Sorry about
that.
It's
nice to speak with you. No worries.
Nice to speak with you, and I apologize for thinking that Julia was going to be on with us.
Oh, no, that's okay.
Tell
She's
us where
here
the,
in spirit.
Where the idea came from for the I See Change Almanac and what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, one thing that is really important to understand is that this project is definitely the brainchild of Julia Kumari Drapkin. She is the lead producer and at the helm of all this. And the origin story is rooted in the fact that typically environmental reporting works this way. The scientist makes observations, does a study, asks the questions, and then publishes that study. And then that's the inroad for journalists to find stories. The journalist will do the story about that publication, interview the scientist, and if they have time, they'll go and find an anecdote from the local community that study impacts to make it more familiar. Well, I See Change is really trying to flip that model and start with that local community to find stories. We're inviting anyone and everyone to come to the platform on the Almanac in order to make observations about how the environment is changing around them and report on what that means to them to see that change, whether it's drought, whether it's a wildfire, or whether tomatoes are coming in early this year. This is something that we're really interested in doing, just trying to start this conversation from the bottom up about climate change.
And it's so consistent with what we like to do here at The Brian Lehrer Show and here at WNYC in general, that I think this is really, really cool. How do you think it fits into the larger scientific mission of measuring climate change and its impact? Like last year, we had a cooler than normal summer here in the tri-state area. When is I See Change anecdotal evidence a scientific indicator, and when is it just something that might be fleeting that's happening today?
You hit on one of the things that we're definitely thinking about on a regular basis at I See Change. And what we're trying to do is not prove whether or not climate change is happening. That's really not a debate for us. It's more so about documenting that change on this digital almanac that we've created. And the kind of value proposition that we have is to scale down, actually, on how climate change is reported, because you usually see it on this macro level, how it's affecting the nation or the globe. But we're really trying to create that space for local reporting and how it actually affects smaller communities or communities that are more self-defined, whether it's farmers or, you know, the urban environment in LA. So we're trying to think about different levels of scale here. And that's the problem that we're trying to solve with this platform.
So listeners, you get the idea. Our phone lines are open for you right now to say out loud how you see climate change in your backyard, however you define your backyard. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Do you keep a garden and your harvest times have changed over the years, or the first and last frosts come at different times? Whatever, you tell us. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Is there different wildlife that you think is a function of rising temperatures? We'll talk more about wildlife in our area and some of the unusual sightings recently coming up in our next segment. Do you live near the waterfront in any part of our area and see the change there? Call in and say it out loud as we invite Brian Lehrer Show listeners to contribute to the public media and citizen scientist crowdsourcing project called I See Change. You can see all their work at itsthealmanac.org. That's the web address people should use.
Yeah, it's either thealmanac.org or icchange.org. That's ISEE change.org.
And we have links on our page, too, if you can't remember all that. So you can always go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. But call in with the change you see, and let's talk about it on the air. 212-433-WNYC. As an example, President Obama may not know about ICChange.org, but he contributed indirectly yesterday, as only the President of the United States could do, in his commencement address at the Coast Guard Academy. He sees change from global warming in his role as Commander-in-Chief.
Rising seas are already swallowing low-lying lands from Bangladesh to Pacific Islands, forcing people from their homes.
And then he said,
severe drought helped to create the instability in Nigeria that was exploited by the terrorist group Boko Haram. It's now believed that drought and crop failures and high food prices helped fuel the early unrest in Syria, which descended into civil war in the heart of the Middle East. So increasingly, our military and our combatant commanders, our services, including the Coast Guard, will need to factor climate change into plans and operations, because you need to be ready.
And a little later in the speech, he said this.
Many of our military installations are on the coast, including, of course, our Coast Guard stations. Around Norfolk, high tides and storms increasingly flood parts of our Navy base and an air base. In Alaska, thawing permafrost is damaging military facilities.
President Obama seeing change already taking place from global warming from Bangladesh to Nigeria to U.S. military bases in his role as Commander-in-Chief. As we continue with the IC Change Project and Lily Bree, Senior Journalism Researcher for IC Change or thealmanac.org, and your calls at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. So, Lily, can someone just post a video clip of the president's commencement address? Maybe some cadet who knows about your project? Is that within the rules of the IC Change Almanac?
Yeah, absolutely. People come to the Almanac to share videos and text and photos that either they take or they found. It's just a platform to discuss different changes in weather. And you can even participate through social media. So I was going to say earlier that along with the BLS Nature hashtag, you can easily tack on the IC Change hashtag. And the Almanac will scrape that tweet and add it to our archive to keep the conversation going. It's really easy to participate, really easy to contribute a post.
And some of the images that we will get won't necessarily be climate change oriented because our ask for the photos were more broad than that. But I guess you will figure out which ones actually belong on your site if people use your hashtag too, right?
Right, absolutely.
All right. Well, we have a lot of phone calls coming in, so let's hear what kinds of change people are seeing in our area. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Vasu in New Brunswick, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking call. I have seen quite a bit of change now, like compared to this year to the past 2 years, and we have a backyard with different plants growing. And I see this year particularly, it is 1 month delayed getting the sprouts, different kinds of plants getting germination is delayed clearly, and some of them did not turn up yet.
Vasu, thank you for your call. That's very interesting, and actually we're going to be talking about the delayed spring more in our upcoming segments. And the funny thing is, Lily, that I think the delayed spring that we're having, partly because of the cold winter in the Northeast, is kind of the counter trend, right? This is the exception because mostly what we're hearing year after year after year is how much earlier spring is starting, how much earlier people can plan things, how much later the first frosts are coming, things like that as a result of global warming. But these things don't progress in a straight line scientifically, you know, even if it's progressing clearly like that as a through trend over the decades. And this spring is late rather than early.
Absolutely. And that's very interesting. We do have a lot of participants in Paonia, Colorado, where this project was piloted. And a lot of the posts that we got this year were about that early spring. The fact that it was very warm throughout winter, they didn't see a lot of snow for a while, and then suddenly now, actually, there's a cold front. So whereas climate invariably is changing all the time, we can gain such valuable insight from local communities who are just noticing little changes from year to year.
It's funny how there was a warmer than usual winter in the western United States and a colder than usual winter in the eastern United States. And the only way we can answer questions related to climate change is by looking at the planet as a whole. Like last year was colder than normal here in the New York area, but it was the warmest year on record in terms of the planetary average temperatures. And of course, you have to look at the whole in terms of space, the whole planet, and you have to look at the whole in terms of time, what's happening year after year after year. But that that complicates your anecdotal census here, right?
It does. And actually, in this new phase of IC change, what we're rolling out is this partnership with NASA's JPL. That's the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. They're based in Pasadena. And so they have a new satellite that just launched. It's called OCO2, and it measures carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. So what we're trying to do is combine this remote sensing data, which does give you that zoomed out big picture of how much carbon dioxide is in our atmosphere and how that potentially could affect climate change, and combining that with the anecdotal at the very local level.
Mitchell in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mitchell.
Yes, hi, Brian. Thanks so much for your show. I love it.
Thank you.
Sure. Just about that, what we have to look at with climate change is not just heating, but both directions, heating and freezing. It's climate change all the way around, just to comment on that.
Except that it's global warming as the kind of climate change that's really mattering to the general direction of, you know, how humans and other species have to respond to adapt, right?
Yes, but there's also a phenomenon that's been cited by scientists called global freezing. And it's all a function of disruption of the climate altogether through anthropogenic sources, really. It goes in both directions.
Have you heard of that climate freezing? I think Mitchell wants to add another particular observation, which he can do in a minute. But have you heard of this freezing going along with the warming as, you know, part of the general disruption, as he says?
Yeah, we actually, so having lived in California and then now being a transplant in Boston, I now really know what winter is. And this past winter,
especially
was,
this year, you really know what snow is.
Exactly. And that's what I was getting at. This past winter, we got blizzard upon blizzard upon blizzard, and it was a record. It was a historical kind of convergence of storms, and we definitely see a lot of that as well. It's not just heat. While the planet itself is warming over time, we do get extremes as a result of that. So extremes could be on either end of the spectrum, extreme heat, extreme cold. So we do get a lot of that too.
So, Mitchell, the observation you wanted to make comes from a friend of yours?
Right. The observation, Brian, is that I actually interviewed the chief of a Native American tribe down in the New Orleans area on an island called Île de Jean Charles, and there's a film that's been made about it called Can't Stop the Water. And I did an interview with all of the director and the chief, because the film was made because the sea levels are rising above sea level some 4 to 5 feet, so that people are having to vacate their homes. They have to wade in the water to just get into. Many of them live in trailers, and just to get in, and then the water goes literally into the trailer, and they're beside themselves because they're not getting any kind of federal help. The Native American group themselves are not recognized as a Native tribe by the U.S. government for lots of historical bizarre reasons, and so they're sort of trapped, and it's directly a relationship to climate change.
Interesting. What's the name of the island again down there?
It's called Île de Jean Charles.
I just wanted
Jean
to hear
Charles.
I just wanted to hear you say that again.
Oh, sweet.
Mitchell, thank you very much. And Lily, I see that you have a chart on your site of the change over the last decade in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. So, for example, for last week, May 3rd through 9th, you have it at about 404 parts per million. Last year, the same week, 401 parts per million, so a little noticeably higher. How about the same week, May 3rd through 9th in 2005, 10 years ago, 381 parts per million? So if that's taken as a 10-year trend, there you have a more than 10% increase over the last decade in the amount of atmospheric CO2.
Absolutely. And this is actually data that's coming from NOAA, which is a government agency.
National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA.
That's right. And they have this data on a site that's called CO2 Now. So anybody could check this. But this is part of our strategy of combining data from the larger pulled back view with the anecdotal. So we provide this chart in our newsletter and on our website every single week to show different trends. And it doesn't always work out that this week this year, or the week of this year, is higher. Sometimes it is actually a little bit lower. But over time, you can see that overall, we do have more of a buildup of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere over time, and that is definitely man-made.
And as of last week, 404 parts per million of CO2, and you compare that to 1,800, and it's up by 120 parts per million, so like a increase of about a third overall over the last 200 years. Lisa in Old Greenwich, Connecticut. You're on WNYC. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Great to be on. Thank you.
Do you see change?
Yeah, very much so. I'm a gardener, and I live in southern Connecticut and have been here for over 20 years. And when I first moved here, I wanted to plant a magnolia tree, which is typically in Zone 7, which is mid-Atlantic and south. And no nursery would sell me one or ship me one. I'm in zone 6, and sometimes even zone 5, depending on the microclimate. Now I can easily purchase and have planted a magnolia tree, which is something you find in the mid-Atlantic states and then further on south, which means that the ground and the air is warm enough to host, a warmer climate plant. So I'm happy for getting my plant, but I'm sad that this is the reason why.
Thank you very much. Have you heard things like that before? Whole species of plants, Lily, that are growing in recent years or recent decades in parts of the country where they couldn't grow before?
Not off the top of my head, but I do. There was a story from KPCC as part of the IC Change Initiative.
That's in the Southern California public radio station.
Yes, and they did a story about California poppies and how the drought has pretty much affected how long they're able to bloom. It was there and then it wasn't. And this is pretty significant. This is a tradition that a lot of people grew up with. You go and see the poppies. And for this year, a lot of people couldn't do that because they just weren't there.
Heather in Lyndhurst, you're on WNYC. Hi, Heather.
Good morning. Yeah, last New Year's Eve, we were in London for New Year's Eve. It was 50 degrees, beautiful. And my parents were in Temecula, California, which is the Palm Desert, as the speaker has talked about. And they had 6 inches of snow.
Meaning things are going wacky all over the place?
Wacky all over. We should have had snow and a brutal London typical New Year's Eve, and my parents should have been watching fireworks and outside having a balmy California day, but things were reversed.
Thank you very much. Barry in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Barry.
Hi, I am drinking a longer growing season for New York grapes. The quality of wines from northern climates has been improving over the last decade, in part because of climate change. And in fact, they've even started producing wine in England again, I've read, because of warmer and longer seasons.
The grape season for wines is longer in the New York area. Interesting. Does that produce any particular favorite wine for you? Do you want to shout out a wine?
I don't want to show any bias, but there's some lovely unoaked Chardonnays being produced on the North Fork these days.
All right, Barry. Thank you very much. So we're going to wrap it up with Lily Bui from ICChange.org and TheAlmanac.org. Just before you go, tell us again how you put this into context with your actual science partners, like NASA, right, is a partner of your citizen scientist project. Because I will tell you that half the calls we're getting are people with, with the observations that they want to share, and the other half are people saying, you know, I don't think looking year to year is super helpful, or these are scant samplings, these are not data, or this just plays into somebody's party line, things like that. So how do the observations that citizen scientists make actually get incorporated as true, you know, official scientific data by your science partners?
I am so glad you asked that, because I will tell you right now that those anecdotal pieces are data. There's so many different kinds of data. You have your numbers, which is more quantitative, but this is qualitative. And the story aspect is actually a very important part of nuancing any data set. So a lot of these calls that are coming in are so inspiring, because I'm hearing people just kind of make observations about the world around them. And that is what science pretty much is. That's the role that it serves. And while it may be easy to kind of discount these observations and say, well, it's probably not important, it's probably just me, that is really at the core of IC Change. We're trying to valorize really the anecdote and what individuals can notice. And what we're trying to do is tie that to the big picture. And maybe to wrap this up, something interesting is that the word broadcast itself comes from farming, which goes, it's a kind of interesting connection between the, communication and the environment. Before you would get your environmental reporting from a central hub, and that would be broadcasted out. But what we're trying to do is cultivate a community-driven conversation that we can all build upon about climate change.
Lily Bui, journalism researcher for the IC Change Project, which combines citizen science, participatory public media, NASA, and others in creating a crowdsourcing project of, as you hear, observations of how the planet is changing before our eyes. You can see their stuff at their websites, TheAlmanac.org or ICChange.org, and we have links on our page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Lily, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We'll keep looking for change in our next segment, this time with wildlife in particular. Notice all these news stories just lately: coyotes, black bear and Yonkers the other day, seals in New York Harbor, even whales. So we'll talk about wildlife in the New York metropolitan area. What's going on here with the leading New York City naturalist? Stay with us.